Hello, and welcome to episode 74 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the show where a group of indie creators get together, talk about comics, have a bit of a wrestle, and generally have a real sexy time. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mask from Mars, and this week I'm joined by comic artist, writer, and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Sorry.
What's the problem? It's changing it up.
That was carry on Butcher there. I didn't expect that. We're also joined by writer down the tubes contributor and Desperate Dan cosplayer, Tony Esmond.
Oh, Desperate Dan. I'm a vegetarian though, so that fucks that idea, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what would it be? It'd just be like carrot pie.
Corn pie.
Yeah, something quite horny.
Oh, and speaking of horny, we're joined by a guest this week. Yes, yeah. He's the creator of the series Cognition and the mind and head editor behind the great anthology series Sliced Quarterly. It's Ken Reynolds.
Hey, hello. Ken.
You're okay, Ken.
No one heard him because you interrupted him when he said hello.
No, sorry.
Trying to be friendly. What did you say? Try and be friendlier to the guests, you said to me.
Yes, I always try and get you to
be friendly to me.
Yeah.
Shut up, Ken. I'm talking to these two. No, Ken's with us.
So
for
I don't
whole...
have to be friendly at all.
No, please don't. Most people aren't.
No.
Some people aren't friendly at all after the show. We never hear from them again.
Yeah, exactly. This show's essentially like a 2-hour blood sport episode. That's all it is. Our topic for this week, folks, might as well get stuck into it. It's something that's been described in the past by our very own Mr. Esmond as the lifeblood of the small press scene. Do you remember that?
Oh, did I say that, did I? That's called him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder I read that.
It's true. That's something we're talking about, is the mighty anthology. Yes.
Yes.
There's a lot of them about. Some of us have been in them, made them, read them.
Yep.
I'm sure everyone's read one at some point in their lives. So this week, we thought we'd dim the lights, put on some Kenny G, get a guy that's putting out an extremely good anthology on. talk about the subject and just see where this week takes us. So how should we start off, gents? Who wants to kick off the debate?
Well, I asked if I could talk about my... Because I suggested we talk about what's your favourite one, didn't I?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So did we want to go in turns just to see what our favourite ones are and explain why, perhaps? Or
yeah.
What do you think?
I don't mind.
Should we start with you, Ken? What would you say is your favourite, historically, that you've read? What would be your favourite one?
I'm going to surprise a few people, I think, and just sort of say my comics reading history isn't all that long. I sort of dipped in and out of comics from when I was a kid and then sort of back in again as a teenager, and then it fell away and I really picked it up properly about 2 years ago. So I'm gonna cop out and say my favorite anthologies are the ones I work on.
Right, okay.
That's totally cool. I mean, I kind of went out of comics when I was going for university and stuff. Didn't have a lot of extra money to buy stuff apart from drink and stuff. So yeah, I wasn't into comics and pads heavily. Yeah. Yeah.
Priorities.
RJs are expensive, aren't they?
Pardon?
RJs, they're expensive.
What are RJs?
I'm going to type it now, so I don't have to say it.
Just say it, Tony. Just say it.
Oh, yes, yeah.
There we go.
No, you should
make why does it say Jones? Jones.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say that.
I tell you what, Rubber Jones sounds like a character from an 80s anthology.
Ken, I've got an idea for a story.
You have said on here, and you're embarrassed to say that.
Yeah. Ken, I've copyrighted it. It's now my idea. We're going to do a story. You ready?
Do you know what I honestly thought it was that you were talking about then, Tony?
What?
And this is not safe work. Obviously, folks, you already know that. Tony, I thought you said rim job.
Is that a basketball thing?
You're
Knicks, haven't you? You've been to see the Knicks. Are they basketball, are they?
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah. There you go.
You don't know any sport, though.
You must have seen a few rim jobs while you're in America,
See, rim jobs and Vince going through university explains a lot.
Yeah. The student loans.
Yeah.
Like I had any money for that.
Poor lady went off topic there.
I know. Went into a dark area already. Yeah, so Dan, you were spending all your money on booze. So when you when you came back into the, like, comics, were you reading anthologies then, or did you just pick up?
No, the kind of the obviously 2000 AD is a massive mainstay.
Yeah,
and I said it earlier. I used to love Oink when I was younger.
Oh yeah, I've written Oink down.
Yeah, that's great. It was so subversive for the time. It felt like a kind of step up from kind of the other kiddie comics like the Beano and the Dandy. Not knocking them for they're good for what they are. But my absolute standout one, which was kind of like the punk of comics for me at the time, was Toxic.
Oh yes, we love Toxic, don't we?
It's absolutely fantastic. And if you're looking at kind of the characters in it, you have Martial Law, Accident Man, the Trucker, Sex Warrior. There was just so many good characters in it, so many great storylines. It was brilliant, so good, really garish and kind of in your face.
And it Accident Man is now a movie. It was going to be a movie, isn't it? We were talking about this previously.
With what's that chap's name? He was in Doctor Strange.
Was, yeah. I think he's in Green Street 3.
Scott Adkins.
Oh, yeah. Blood, the man.
That'd be good.
Yeah, he's in the Bloodsport movies, or is it Kickboxer? I can't. Oh, there's so many straight to DVD films that he's been in. But so you were reading before you had your sort of college and uni break? That those were the sort of comics that
I was reading those in secondary school.
Yeah,
so they were kind of a real big influence on me, and they're continually going back. I think some of those stories worked a lot better as episodic, especially the one with the driver who's driving a huge kind of massive lorry across
it's just
country.
Completely insulting non-stop, isn't it?
Yeah.
And gloriously so, yeah. Yeah.
But that was so much better in short doses as opposed to if it was a whole comic, it'd be kind of like, well,
wouldn't work at all, would it?
Yeah, so it's one note, but on its own, it's fine.
Yeah.
And in Martial Law, that's the first taste of the character. I think he'd been around before then, but once I'd seen it in Toxic, I was hooked.
Yeah, I think Epic had released some of his stuff beforehand, didn't they? And then I think was Pat Mills the editor of Toxic? I've got a feeling he was.
He was involved somehow, yes. Yeah. But it was kind of one of those things that I've discovered Martial Law in there and then didn't find him for years and then came back and realised, oh, there's a trade. Oh, shit, there's all these other comics. And it was just the best.
There's a lovely hardback. I've got it in front of me here. Brilliant. Such a good series.
I missed out on that. You were saying that went at a cheaper price on Amazon.
It's one of those mistake ones on Amazon where they put it up for £2.50 when it should be 25 quid or something ridiculous like that.
Cool.
Yeah, lovely it is,
Because I reread Martial Law and Hell, where basically the Martial Law versus Pinhead.
That's in there, I don't think, off the top of my head.
Pat Mills just absolutely understands the Hellraiser character, the Pinheads and Cenobites, and works in with this Martial Law character so well. It's just... You know, sometimes people like mash together two characters and two properties, and they don't
work.
One of them, they might understand one part of it, but not all of it. But that another example is there was a Wildcats one with aliens in it. If you ask, it's going to be an issue of the Wildcats kicking the aliens around, which is going to be pretty crap. But in it, they get decimated, absolutely terrorized by the aliens. And
is that Wildcats or was that Stormwatch?
Stormwatch. They had Wildcats in it. Sorry, they turn up.
I think Wildcats did have a crossover as well, though. Aliens have crossed over with everyone, haven't they?
Yeah.
But I get a feeling, I know, was it Boom? Was it Boom? Who brought out the recent Nightbreed comic? The movie is called Nightbreed and the book is called Cabal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to say
Is it Boom?
Yeah.
Yeah. They missed a trick without having Pat on that. That would have been amazing.
That would have been fantastic. You
know? Yeah. Okay.
He'd have done that, see, Sean.
Yeah.
I reread some Toxic recently, and I've got the issues that I'd missed out, and I admit I didn't have any more. And it still stands up, still really good stuff. And there's an Accident Man trade that came out, hardback came out about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and that's great stuff as well. You have you? Yeah. Yeah, it's got Howard Chaykin covers and looks brilliant. Yeah. And it's Tony Skinner was the co-writer, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. The film with that is good. If they do it right, and I hope they've learned lessons from films like Dread and Deadpool, if you treat the source material as your Bible, as gospel, and like do a faithful recreation, the reason this is popular is because of it's what it is.
Yeah.
And if you do the faithful adaptation, people will recognise that.
But, will it be better than Jason Statham's The Mechanic? I wonder sometimes. I wonder if it can be better. Because in that, isn't it an accident? Doesn't he kill people by accidents in that as well?
Yeah, it makes it look like accidents.
Yeah, it's going to get much better than that, isn't it?
Mike Fallon's a complete arsehole. Rituals make it so much better.
Right. Yeah. He is. And it's arsehole. Like weird sort of muscly female assassins in it as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
sort of strangely proportioned. Yeah. Which I quite like.
Are they going to be like that in the film, do you think?
I like midget assassins, me.
There's one bit where he goes to like kind of like a massive orgy and there's all these kind of exotic animals and people being whipped and homeless people in...
Was that at the point, Dan? Was that at the point when you just thought, I want to make comics?
Yeah. I want to go to orgies. I always feel like my life always seems like I'm never the person who gets invited to orgies. They always seem to be going on. I've never been to one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone else seems to be. Ken was telling us about a couple of orgies he's been to and I didn't.
Yeah.
A little bit jealous.
Oh, yeah.
Are your keys always the ones that are left in the bowl?
I'll just get some horrible rackety old shed. Never get anyone's nice house keys. I'll end up having sex with a lawnmower.
We've all been there.
Pulls out the keys, you're like, fuck it, keep them. I walk home.
My orgies have always gone really smoothly, so I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah. It's all about the preparation, isn't it, Ken?
It is, yeah. It's all about the nibbles. Serve good finger food. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
bees or peas.
What's an orgy without a buffet? That's what I say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wash your hands.
If I was having orgy, hand in there. Yeah, you've got to be dressed before you go to the buffet. So come on. We're not animals.
You'll wash your hands.
It's got to be a cold buffet.
You don't want someone's filthy fingers in your hummus, do you?
There's nothing like a hot lunch.
So, anthologies. I've forgone where we were now. That has completely thrown me.
Well, I just finished my lot, and Tony, I guess, going to The Warriors, The Warrior.
Warrior magazine, yeah, that's probably, I have to think, I was trying to think what is the best anthology for me that I've enjoyed the most, and I'm going to say that. I think 2000 AD is probably second, and very close, because it's longevity, and it's had so many good strips in it. But I think if you want to find a book, a comic that is an anthology and is packed full of just absolute quality, for me, it would have been Warrior magazine. Have you guys read it, have you? Or
I haven't. I've got.
No, I have not. No, how long did it run for?
No.
Well, it ran for 26 issues, and I think it had one or two specials. It ran from 1982 to 1985. I actually bought my first issue in Ken's hometown, in the town of Ipswich.
Oh, cool.
Escaping from boarding school, and there was a comic shop called The Globe, which I think has gone now, Ken, isn't it? I think.
The Globe has gone, but it's the same people that ran The Globe that went across town, and it's now Central City, so it's the same people behind it.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Cool.
Oh, okay.
Premises and renamed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went, I escaped school, and the sort of the way I had to walk on a Saturday into town was past the train station. There was newsagents just out the train station and left, and I bought the first issue in there. And sort of read it as I walked towards the comic shop and waited for the comic shop to open. And it just sort of blew my mind. And when you look at the strips, you will have undoubtedly, everyone will have read some stuff from it because some of it has appeared elsewhere, you know? So it's won 17 Eagle Awards, incidentally, and it was produced by Des Skin, who we all know from Comics International and Doctor Weekly and that sort of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So Steve Moore was initially offered the revamp of Marvel Man. Surprisingly, a lot of it is revamps. You wouldn't initially realise that on reading it. But he passed it on to Alan Moore, who was a friend of his. And Gary Leach drew the first few after Dave Gibbons had turned it down. And later on, Alan Davis drew it. And we've all read, I take it we've read Marvel Man / Miracle Man, have we? Or?
Yeah.
Okay, so that appeared in there. David Lloyd was approached by Des, who Des had worked with, I think, on Hulk Weekly, and asked him to do something similar to Night Raven. And he got in touch with Alan Moore, and they did V for Vendetta, which we all know about. Axel Press Button and Laser Eraser was also, weirdly, not that many people know this yet, that was also a revamp, and it was from a strip that had appeared in Dark Star Music Magazine, Sounds Magazine, and it had been written by Steve Moore under the pen name of Kurt Vile, and it had actually been drawn by Alan Moore, really, believe it or not, initially, and that went on to be written by Steve Moore again, and a young Steve Dillon drew it, and it's very good, in fact. Has anyone read Axel Press Button?
No.
So it's a guy whose body is eaten, I think, by like a plant, a sort of strange alien plant, fungus sort of thing. And as the fungus is eating him, it keeps apologising to him for eating him. And he gets given a sort of robot body. He's only got one human arm, a bit of chest and a head, and the rest is a sort of cyborg body. But he gets given a button on his chest that when he presses it, he does a sex wee. And and I remember, it was quite subversive to me at the time because I was only a kid. and Reading Warrior. And you could actually buy a badge that, on the back. I think at the back of it, they sell badges and stuff, which are really cool. You didn't really get that sort of thing much in it at the time. And you could buy, it was just a button from Axel Press Button, which, you know, you thought, oh, if I press this, something will happen, you know.
Yeah.
And then they added a female character to it. Very good, beautiful, beautiful strip. And it's been reprinted. I think Eclipse Comics put it out. And then you had Father Chandor, Demon Hunter, who had continued from the House of Hammer, with art by John Bolton, again written by Steve Moore.
Because Des Skin did a lot of House of Hammer. Anyway, I think
he did. Yeah, he ran that prior to that. Yeah. And I picked some up when we were in Nottingham, didn't I? Did I show you them?
Yes, you did. Yeah,
really nice. Gary Leach moved on to Warp Smith, which was part of the Miracle Man strike. Might was called Marvel Man at the time. And then you had the excellent Beau Jeffries saga by Parkhouse and Moore, which has got reprinted recently. I think you can buy on Sequential, which is really cheap on Sequential. I think it's only like £3 or something. £3.99 for 95 pages.
Oh, nice.
Really worth reading. It's got new material in it. Because you've got to remember, these strips are only sort of 6 to 9 pages long. And they seem to have filled out quite a few trades by now. So there's a lot of added material to what appeared in Warrior over the time. There was a big fallout, as I'm not going to go into the whole sort of Miracle Man, Marvel Man saga, but there was a huge fallout. Des fell out with Alan Moore. Mick Anglo, who originally created Marvel Man, never got paid. And then Marvel sued. And it just went on and on and on. And various people got involved in it. And it became a mess.
Yeah.
All the stories got sold to Pacific Comics initially, which nobody realises or remembers. I don't think Pacific put anything out about it. And I'm not sure it had something to do with the amount that Des charged them, but they soon went bust, Pacific, and they all went over to Eclipse Comics. It was absolutely full of groundbreaking stuff. I mean, there was stuff like, what else was there? There was The Spiral Path. Was just beautiful stuff, just incredible stuff. And I've met Des a few times and asked him about it. And it's, you know, it's always a bit of a high point, and certainly a high point in British comics, I think. But for something that's full of stuff that's, you know, sort of, really well thought of, like, you try and buy in it the issue of Miracle Man with the baby, you know, where she has the baby. It's going to cost you a lot of money on eBay. But you buy a copy of Warrior, you can still pick them up for under a fiver.
Okay.
Yeah, nobody seems to ever buy them.
I was going to say, an issue with when you're in these kind of the anthology stuff, the legal issues of pulling it out and getting it reprinted somewhere else.
Mm.
We can talk about that a bit later, but...
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a huge problem, especially with all the different stories in this are so caught up with other sort of companies and stuff like that, you know. But also, I think it's because it's in black and white. I think it's a magazine size, and it's in black and white, and I don't think perhaps a lot of collectors, especially in America, go for that sort of thing. You know?
I do wonder when it comes to those sort of publishing houses like Fleetway and all that, all these fantastic sort of characters and strips that existed. I'd love to see sort of new life sort of breathed into them, but you know, where do these licenses live? Do you know what I mean? You know, they'll never.
That's what happened with Miracle Man. You know, it was just legal case after legal case after legal case. Neil Gaiman was involved at one point, and you know, all this sort of stuff was just going on non-stop, you know.
Yeah.
Was it Todd McFarlane?
He was. Sorry, mate?
Sorry, didn't John Freeman put something on Down the Tubes lately about a load of rights issues on some old comics?
Yeah, he would have done, yeah. No, I know he's tied up in a lot of stuff around that sort of thing, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But he had a big old list of who had the rights to what.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So presumably these things are kind of contested all the time. Like,
yeah, it must be, surely.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sure every single one of us would love to get our hands on some forgotten strip that we loved when we were a kid. You know, we just think, I'd love to write that, you know, or draw that, or whatever.
You would do that, Action Force.
The Stormforce, yeah.
Stormforce, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, my little
baby. I mean, there's a character in it called Big Ben in Warrior, who I'd love to do some stuff on, and it's basically John Steed, if John Steed was a superhero, and he's the man with no time for crime.
Awesome.
He's got like a
does he do
hat
a sex wee?
Oh, I like to think so. But but that's because it's part of the Miracle Man / Marvel Man universe. I'm not sure. Yeah, you know, they're allegedly living in the same universe. I don't know whether it would be available. You know, it's a weird one, isn't it? But a lot of these things only were in three issues. You know, a lot of the stories didn't really appear that much. You know, and but to get, I'd love to see a big, you know, bound edition of just all the, you know, like you got with the Warren magazines and Vampirella and all that sort of thing. They put out a series of hardbacks, didn't they? That were essentially just whole issues, including adverts and letter pages and stuff like that. I'd love to see them do it with Warrior, but it's so fucked sort of with the legal cases going on around it. I mean, even I think Starenko's tied up in it somewhere, because I think Starenko and Des were mates, and I think Starenko helped him design the original look of the comic. Yeah. There was actually even a Warrior magazine before this, which was a load of reprinted stories that I think don't trust me on this, I don't think Des had the rights to publish. So this the second version of Warrior. And then he went on to do a couple of books, and it all went a bit bent, and people sued him, and then he started saying he had the rights to certain things and he didn't. And you know, I went to Des's house once. I bought a load of stuff off eBay, and he said, he sent me a message over eBay about some comics I was buying. He said, why don't you just pop round and get them? So I did, and he turned out to be like a really good bloke, you know. And you hear these horror stories about him, about allegedly he put his money into sex lines and all this sort of thing. I don't know how true it is, but to me it was super nice, you know. And I'm sure he's got a dungeon full of old Warrior magazines he could sell if he wanted.
Yeah. You know. Why has he got a dungeon?
Well, he's got a big house with a dungeon.
Yeah. We all have one if we could.
Yeah. But that's my main Warrior. I think it was genuinely an absolute high point. When you think of the, you know, the creators involved with this, it's just fucking beautiful stuff, you know. Really, really good for me. And it hit a point when it was an edgy comic when I was starting to read edgy comics, and it sort of really had an effect on me. You know.
Well, it sort of went, do you say it stopped at around 85 or 86?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. And I was two.
Yeah.
I actually was.
Around that time, especially probably you're talking from probably 1980 to 89, 90, like British anthologies, weekly anthologies, there were so many of them about. Yeah. You know, you see lots of different ones pop up, and one of the ones I used to like, I mean, I've talked about Battle with, you know, Battle Comic, and then Battle with Stormforce, which was then absorbed by, that one was absorbed by Eagle? No, it wasn't. It was absorbed by...
It's an Eagle. Action Force, was it?
Yeah, no, there was, might have been Eagle, actually.
Okay.
Everything I seem to
the
like...
The new Eagle,
just gets,
you mean? The new revamp of Eagle?
Yeah, everything I like seems to get absorbed by Eagle, because I remember another strip, well, another comic that only had like 12 issues. And I used to love it, like when you walk into like a news agent's and you see a first issue of a new anthology, you know, this new comic that's out. And it felt, when you picked up a first issue, it felt special, didn't it, back in the day. And I remember one I got, Wildcat. Not Wildcats, just Wildcat. Do you ever remember this?
Well, the DC comic.
No. It was a Fleetway comic.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember it. I always remembered it, but it only ran for like 12 issues. Now, I looked it up, and it ran from like October 88 till March 89. Now, at the time when it was started out, there was a preview comic given away with 2000 AD. They did a lot of adverts. Okay. Adverts with 2000 AD, Eagle, and Wizard and Chips and stuff before the launch. So it had a lot of sort of buzz behind it. And the basic setup was, it was an anthology comic all about this ship, the Wildcat, and this group of sort of astronauts and adventurers that were on it, and each different strip was about them. And you had like a guy called Turbo Jones, there was Lona, Kitty McGee, Joe Alien. I remember Lona because he had one of those classic sort of, had sort of, he was
did
a black,
he never go to party?
he looked a bit, little bit like Apollo Creed crossed with crossed with Rambo, but only used like an old sort of cowboy's sort of like six shooter sort of thing, right, in space. So there's lots of different crazy stories
in
going
space.
On. Yeah.
On acid.
Everything's better in space. Yeah. And I always think that it went on longer than it did, but looking it up, I was like, oh, it only had 12 issues. It had holiday specials. They used to love holiday specials in the 80s. And then it merged with The Eagle, which was another comic that I used to read a lot of. And I'm talking, when I got into it, when I first read The Eagle, it was when Dan Dare was blonde. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Okay.
Before he went back to the classic sort of 50s look. He looked a little bit like Roy of the Rovers.
Right, okay.
In space. yeah, but Eagle just seemed to, like, you know, there would be these strips that you'd like, and then they merge into something else, and then you sort of lose them after a while. You know, they weren't as popular, or they just sort of fade away into the background.
Yeah. You know, I think it's worth explaining here for the people who listen from other countries, especially America, is that while we're talking about anthologies, everyone was expecting it was going to be, you know, Dark Horse Presents or Marvel Comics Presents or something like that. It's not, because anthologies were the way that British comics were presented on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So they would be comics with 5 or 6 stories, maybe 5 or 6 pages long each story, sometimes a lot less, actually. I know TV21, some of their stories are only 2 pages, 1 page. And they would come out weekly, and you'd go to the newsagents, possibly on a Sunday when your dad picked up the Sunday papers, and you'd get this comic brought back. And that was the way comics were presented to us.
Yeah. I mean, I used to get the, I've said it before, the Transformers and Action Force comic, and that was basically half and half.
Yeah.
And that was weekly, and that was essentially all reprints from American comics.
Yeah. And it was like homegrown talent did stuff. Sometimes combined American reprints and new stuff. And then sometimes, especially more maybe the girls' comics and the humour comics were completely British.
Yeah.
And let's face it, most of it's Scottish built, you know.
Yeah.
Scotland, DC Thompson, and DC Thompson's were the one in Scotland, weren't they? They you know, they create a lot of sort of these weekly products, you know.
Yeah. Mm. I mean for me, you know, the '80s when I first got into comics, it was those weekly anthologies. Of course, when you're a kid, you don't think of them as the term anthology. They're just comics to you, aren't they?
Yeah.
And everything, it seemed to be that I liked. A lot of it was sci-fi. I think the UK anthology sort of market, certainly in the 80s, was dominated by sci-fi, wasn't it?
Yeah, you were living in a sort of post-Star Wars war world then, weren't you?
Yeah.
Where, you know, everything, you know, you had a lot of popular... You know, Battlestar Galactica had been on the television. Buck Rogers had been on television. You know, this sort of thing. It was very popular at the time, wasn't it?
Judge Dredd in 2000 AD had firmly sort of stamped his mark on the market.
I mean, that's the daddy of anthologies, isn't it? For us, 2000 AD. You
know? Yeah. I think that's kind of a beyond mention, if you know what I mean. It's synonymous with it. It's so kind of like it needs no...
Yeah,
that and the magazine. Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. Anyone who's interested in 2000 AD, I know we've said it a couple of times, but the documentary Future Shock is highly recommended.
And what it does is it talks about the culture of British comics as well at the time, which I find really interesting.
Yeah.
Which people have forgotten about now, you know?
There's also a big 2000 AD show next year. Is it February?
Yeah.
That's going to be massive. I think we're going to be at that. That's going to be fantastic. But definitely that documentary, it's a real warts and all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, sometimes I thought there'd be a bit of glamour involved, but it's the absolute polar opposite to that. Like, when the story, when they're blocking water coming in with pages of artwork.
Oh, yes. It just makes you want to cry. Yeah.
Draw your fingernails down your face, like, no!
But I liked how they put across how bloody hard it is to make comics.
Yeah, because it's 2000 AD, because it's such a name... everyone thinks, well, that, you know, it's easy, you know, they've got it sort of down pat, they know exactly what they're doing, but it is, you know,
the time they mentioned about struggling, and I can imagine it was maybe an issue for a lot of comics, was the kind of 90s culture, lad culture. I'm not sure how
that's when Andy Diggle took over, wasn't it? I know they talk a bit about that, don't they? And that's when they had this sort of new regime suddenly thrust upon a lot of people who were extremely talented and, you know, good writers and artists. And they were said, you know, it's almost like we need more splash pages. We need more boobs. We need more, you know, cultural references. You know, there needs to be a Spice Girls character and all this sort of crap suddenly coming out, you know?
I think once you start trying to follow the lead of someone else, you're automatically behind.
Yeah.
You're trying to follow someone else. So you've got to kind of make your own path, and you're going to live and die by that.
Yeah. They'd also sort of weathered the sort of storm, certainly in the 80s, some comics. The controversial aspects, you know, if a lot of horror comics were getting sort of, if you look back on it now, it looks tame as anything compared to what we see. But
it's this little bluster. I mean, it's the, once again, sort of media claws trying to find something to blame for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why someone does something horrible, and it's been like that since the dawn of time with humanity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big saga around Action Comics, not the American Action Comics, English Weekly Action Comics, you know, which is so overwhelmingly, you know, just biased by, you know, people like the Daily Mail and all these sort of people who just want to, you know, rail against the world for something or other.
Yeah.
You know, think they're the moral majority when it's just a comic that kids enjoyed. Yeah. You know, I liked 2000 AD in the same reason I liked Warrior, because it had that edge to it. There was a nastiness to the humour as well,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The real black humour to
it. I was reading some, watching something about Dungeons and Dragons, the big Dungeons and Dragons scare, about us all kind of satanic and getting your thing devil worship. You look at that kind of, look back at that scare now, and it's absolutely pathetic, vapid. Yeah. There's nothing to it whatsoever. So whenever someone comes along and says, "Our video games are doing X, Y, and Z," it's like, okay, this is the flavour of the month.
Yeah, have they watched MTV?
You're just saying that because you just bought Hero Quest.
Yeah. I saw that you put that up. Yeah.
We had a game of that today. My wife was...
Do you know what? I'm so jealous. That's quite expensive to get these days as well, isn't it, Hero Quest?
Yeah, it's. I managed to get a very good bargain of someone I won't mention on Twitter.
Splendid.
Yeah.
Did you say your missus played it with you?
Yeah, it's me and my son, and so we'll get my wife to play as well.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So,
okay.
We had to go there. And she said, "It's not tabletop gaming." And I was like, "Nope, it's
no, on the floor.
It's real life Hero Quest." Yeah. I highly recommend anyone YouTube the best thing about Hero Quest, which is a video by Bardic Broadcasts, and there's a guy with a huge beard talking about why Hero Quest is so great, and it's hilarious.
Oh God, I can already see what this is going to be
it's amazing, Dan. You'll really appreciate that.
I'll check this out.
The amount of comic shops that have games nights, though, it seems to put in a few quid for them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't understand it quite, to be fair. I put it in the sort of same box as furries.
It's also a social thing, and as everyone knows about us...
I don't like talking to anyone.
I don't like people.
I used to work on Shaftesbury Avenue, and there's a place on the corner of Charing Cross Road and Shaftesbury Avenue. I think it's called, like, the Orc's Nest or something. It's like a kind of fantasy gaming shop. And I felt... what I imagine some people are like when they get into the comic shop the first time, when I go into there, it's kind of like I'm in an alien world here and I don't belong. And then the guy behind the counter says, "Are you right, mate?" And I'm like, yeah,
I'm fine. And then you run off. more sort of BO-y, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, because comics
from
are cool.
what I understand,
yeah,
from what I understand, talking to my local comic book guy, the reason they do all this extra stuff is because they don't actually make a lot of money selling comics.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah.
Games the way forward. Yes, there's going to be an awesome podcast board game. It's like it's like Monopoly crossed with an orgy. I don't know.
Cards Second Life.
Cards Against Humanity.
What's that one you play, Vince? I keep getting emails from you saying to join. Is it Second Life? Is that the one?
No, it's Naked Twister. But you know, you never join in.
I know, I don't.
One day, Tony.
It's an interesting thing you said, Ken, like the comic shops having to kind of put on more events and things. I like the events when you're getting people in and kind of interacting with creators and stuff, but it's kind of a sad state of affairs that comics are not selling as well as they used to.
I'm not sure it's even that it's that they're not selling as well, it's just the margins are so slim. And when it's a model where they've got to guess how much they're going to sell 3 months in advance.
Yeah.
If they order too many, they lose profit. I mean, he's only got over-ordered by 3 comics and he's lost the profit on the whole lot.
We've got to get someone on from
who runs a comic shop. Comic shop person,
because like the Captain America one recently, like when he said Hell Hydra, that just flew off the shelves and there was no way someone would be able to tell.
Yeah,
that was going to be so popular.
You got to keep your eye on this shit, I suppose. You know, stick a few in the back, wouldn't it? Yeah.
What's he telling me about the other day? What's the company that does the naked covers and they sort of, you have stages of undress as the covers go on?
Oh, that's Red Mars.
They're photo covers, Tony.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not familiar with those, but essentially the more you order, the more revealing cover you
get.
They have variant covers where you have the fully dressed lady, the partially dressed lady, and the naked lady.
Okay.
What do I know about this?
Basically, this company keeps going because they do that.
Sliced quarterly. Is that the name of it?
It's an idea by the sound.
You shared with us that Kickstarter book, Vince, that was essentially this pin-ups of two naked pirate ladies comic book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, shortly after our
times
sex.
Went over.
Yeah. It was shortly after our sex episode, wasn't it? That we discovered all of this stuff that was coming out. All this filth.
It's hard because it's a bit of a gut punch when you're trying to come up with these characters in storylines and trying to be a bit clever and inventive, and then someone's just drawing a pair of tits and getting like 5 times as much money.
Yeah.
okay.
It's like when I went around last time, we were around to Vince's house. He went, "Come in, come in." He's all secretive, and I said, "What's going on?" He said, "My partner's out. Quick, come in the back." And we had to climb through a load of boxes.
I have never said to you, Tony, come in the back.
He pulled out.
So it's over your chest.
Yeah. Pop it out. So he says, "Look, is that werewolf porno comic I saved from London Super Comic Con?"
No, I say that because it's I'm sending it to you for your birthday.
Anyway. I'm not getting nicked.
Also, you know, kind of the comics with the blank covers. I don't know what that is about. I'm not saying like trying to be funny. I literally don't know what that's about. Well, you get a comic and it's got a blank cover, and
give it in some drawers on it at a convention.
Okay.
For you, don't they? You
know what I mean? Fair enough.
But some of the covers aren't actually that good. Depends which one you get. Some of them are too shiny to draw on, almost. You know.
Yeah.
Are just the wrong stock of paper.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay.
So if you got like a Walking Dead and blank cover, and you get Charlie Adlard to do it.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah, and it's one off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You go up to a table at some conventions, and you just see like a whole line of like blank covers with just like Walking Dead and Batman written on the top of it.
But that is a comic, though.
It's a comic.
The same comic inside. Yeah. It's just a variant cover. They sell quite well, I think, or some of them do. You know, and you can buy them and then get artists to draw on them, or you can just keep a blank cover. I don't know why you would, but some people do.
So, every month they'd do a Batman comic, and you'd get a variant of a blank cover.
Not every time. No, not every time. Okay. Yeah, some of them will be. Yeah. Yeah, and some shops specialise in keeping them back. You've got to buy, I don't know, 30 and you get a blank cover one or something, whatever that is they're running that particular one. Yeah.
Interesting. Anthologies.
Yes, anthologies. I think my first ever one was Mighty World of Marvel, which was the old. We haven't talked much about the Marvel UK side of things, have we?
No.
You know. I think you guys were a bit too young for them,
No, basically Death when Head. Started getting into that, we had the kind of the regular American size ones kind of in the racks, and you were just chancing your arm every week to see what you could get.
Yeah.
So I've got a copy of Overkill here, which is the sort of Brilliant. Anthology of a lot of them. They used to put them all together, didn't they?
What was the one that did? It had Akira blueprints in it.
Is it Meltdown?
Oh. Yeah, Meltdown.
Yeah.
The last American Akira. I can't remember what else.
Yeah, was it Domu? I think Domu was it.
That might appear in it. Yeah, I can remember reading the first one, and I was kind of into kind of Japanese anime and manga. I started getting into it, like reading Akira and stuff. And I'd looked into Akira, and it's like fucking hell. There's like about 10 phone book sized comics of this.
Yeah.
And when I saw that first anthology, it had like 5 pages. I was like, fucking hell, how many comic issues is this going to have to go up to get to the end of this story?
Yeah.
In fact, Tom Sable wrote into me on Twitter and said that was one of his favourite ones because it introduced him to Akira.
Yeah.
And that was about the same time as we were getting... Is that just before we started getting the manga magazines?
You know, that was literally just on the cusp.
Yeah,
I think you're right. Yeah.
All this stuff coming over. Because I've told this story before, but there was a comic shop in Croydon called The Phantom Zone. And I went in there and they were showing Akira like on a VHS, and my fucking jaw hit the ground. I was like, oh my God, I wanted some of that.
Yeah. But okay then, we've all got these great books that we read like when we started getting into comics. I mean, I think we can all agree that anthologies were probably the gateway drug, weren't they really?
Yeah.
Whether you knew it or not. How do you think that they've influenced your comics reading and therefore your comics creating as you moved more into actually doing work for yourself?
I'd say we could throw this at Ken. Like, when you got back into doing the comics, why did you think, right, I'm going to go for an anthology to start up?
I guess it was because that's what I saw people doing. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
It's that... There are anthologies already out there, so mostly thanks to you guys, I knew there's this big community of creators out there. And it comes down to logistics. It's unreasonable to ask one person to pump out 25 pages for you for three months. Do you know what I mean?
So
anthologies makes it a bit more manageable. So, I mean, you're asking the same favour of a lot more people, but it's spreading the work and making it a lot easier on everyone if they all buy into the same idea.
Yeah. Because obviously the strength of the anthology is if you've got 5 creators creating 5 pages and they can do that within a month or whatever, essentially you could put out a comic every month.
Yeah.
I know small press creators aren't that reliable.
I made an anthology because I wanted to write all the stories, but like Ken, I knew I couldn't guarantee that an artist would do, and I didn't want to put upon an artist to do 20, 30 pages for an issue. I knew how long it would take. So I did an anthology by getting four or five artists, and I wrote four or five stories for each issue. You know, that's how
I think that's a really smart way of showcasing your writing. I mean, this is what Chris Sides does with his. And I think to have the common thread of a writer with varied artwork is really a clever way to showcase one element of it.
Yeah, Chris, speaking of which, Dark Matter 2 has only just launched, isn't it? And it's very good, I have to say. Yeah, really great issue. Yeah, awesome. That's what
it is. Most of the lettering's fantastic.
I mean, I'll spin this round as the kind of an artist point of view. When working on an anthology, it's really good because you'd work on stories that would be very varied and something that you wouldn't essentially or want to tackle. And you can do like a bit of a riskier art style or try out stuff that maybe you wouldn't.
I completely agree with that. Because that's something that I've done recently. You know, I'm taking part in a couple of sort of anthology bits. And it was just a chance for me to step away from that style, you know, the sort of harder edge sort of line that I was using in the Red Mask and just being a bit looser. And because of that, I discovered a style that I quite liked doing and quite like using and had like, you know, it's added another sort of like string to the bow, as it were, you know, another thing that I can try for future stories of my own.
That's pretty much the whole basis of Slice, to tell the truth. It is very pointed at creators. So I have a hippy dippy way of running it. I don't have deadlines because there isn't a great deal of upside to contributing to it, to tell the truth. I can't afford to page
rates. You never told me this going in. You never told me this.
I made my promises to you, Tony. basically, all I can really offer is an opportunity to do something different.
Yeah.
And to get it by not setting any deadlines and just sort of saying, do it whenever you can, in between paying stuff, in between your proper work. I want it to be the fun thing you do as a distraction when you need a break from the proper stuff almost, you know?
Yeah.
And then I just sort of, I pull an issue together really quickly. I sort of pull what I have together every 3 months and try and make something coherent out of it. And it's worked so far, surprisingly.
That's great, mate. Yeah.
I'm about surprised as you can be that it's...
I mean, it must be a challenge working with different... creators, because obviously there's going to be various levels of professionalism, because some people might do this quite a lot of the time and other people might just do this like once in a blue moon. So when you're kind of on to them for about getting their artwork over or producing their artwork at the correct specs, presumably that offers up different challenges.
I take quite a bit of control over that, to tell the truth. My background's in design, so
yeah,
I sort of work out the kinks if I have to. I take the responsibility on some of that, because like I say, I'm asking for people's time and talent, so I've got to give my end as well. But I don't chase people. I just sort of put up, there's an issue coming out in a month's time, if you want something to be considered, maybe work to that deadline, otherwise it's another 3 months and it's totally up to them whether they finish it or not.
Oh, fair enough.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah,
and that's worked so far. So
so far,
yeah, definitely.
In fact, issue 5 is the first time I've got a big surplus of work that I might have to push to the next issue.
Brilliant.
Oh, nice. Oh,
that's good.
You can work an issue in hand.
I could, barber lettering, which I haven't got to, I could put an issue out next week.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got your set format, though. You know, you've got your certain number of pages, and you've cut it off there.
That's loose as well.
Yeah.
I aim for 24, but I don't mind straying towards 30. If I feel something really should be included and makes sense to be included, I don't limit on that. I just want to make sure it's sort of in the region of a good single issue.
When you started, who did you look to, Ken, to see, you know, you obviously stepped back into comics and you thought, oh, I want to, what books were you buying or looking at? You thought, this is what I want to be doing.
I guess I'm quite insular, to tell the truth.
Right.
I haven't looked around an awful lot. I've just done what I felt I want to read.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the best way to go about things, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but on other occasions, you come across looking really ignorant, like now.
Honestly, I feel like that. There's that old adage of, like, if you try and please everyone, you essentially end up pleasing no one. And definitely write the story that's kind of you want to tell, and because the kind of your enthusiasm for it will come out through the work. Whereas if you're you're writing a story about zombies because that's the hot topic, maybe that'd be put in jeopardy.
I mean, we see quite a lot of it here. I mean, I love the fact that people just create almost in a vacuum, that they're not, like you say, Dan, they're not influenced by trends and Twitter fucking hashtags and all this sort of shite.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I get a lot of, and I've had a lot of just very recently, is people writing to me and saying, you know, you read quite a lot of comics, or you read this and that. What has this been done? And almost have to wrap my, I've had it a couple of times just this week, and people saying, oh, has this been done? And I've had to say to someone, well, yeah, it has been. It was done in, you know, an issue of this or an issue of that, you know. And people said, oh, okay, well, just thought, you know, didn't want to, you know, you don't want to accidentally, because there's so much comics stuff out there, you don't want to accidentally, you know, write something.
Yeah.
Paul is his second name, and he's got a healing factor, you know. It's all, and these things do happen by coincidence sometimes.
I would just be careful. Like, if you're making a you're trying to cash in on a trend, especially with comics, don't do it, because by the time your comic has come out, it's gone. That trend's gone, and you will be marked out as trying to be on that trend, but you missed the boat. So I would advise against that.
The trouble is, everything has been done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's up to the creators to lend their unique voice to it.
Yes. I think once you make peace and with make that, it original. Once you sort of think, right, I'm not going to find the one original idea in the history of the world. I'm just going to do this story and make it the best story there is of that. That's where the success lies, I think. You know, because otherwise, I wouldn't have been making comics for a long time if I would. Yeah. I would have been procrastinating over everything, and that's what I did for many, many years, because no idea was good enough. And it wasn't until I sort of switched my brain off and just thought, "Well, I'm just going to draw something, and, you know, let it be what it'll be." And now I'm currently, I've just done the third issue. Do you know what I mean? That's my comic is what it is. It's just wearing its heart on its sleeve, and it's just being what people can say it's not that original, but I don't care. I just want it to be fun.
There's a lot of writers out there who are driven by subjects, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, I saw someone recently who wrote a book, and they said, a few years ago now, saying it's like Buffy meets CSI, and I thought, you're just joining to, you know, we talked about this about a year ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
And if you're trying to chase that sort of thing, you know, the people who are doing the fake Game of Thrones comics, and, you know, they're looking to see what the next thing's going to be, aren't they? You know, and you think, oh, for fuck's sake, you know.
Yeah, just kind of tell your stories.
Yeah, I like writers that are driven by ideas.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And themes.
When it comes to editing an anthology, what have you learned? Because you literally just stepped back into the game, and then you jumped in the deep end quite majorly. What were the learnings you've taken? You're obviously learning something with every issue, I'm guessing. But
well, I had quite a good in with Dave Hailwood, who edits 100% biodegradable.
That's a long-running small press anthology.
Yeah, he's getting up towards the 20s now.
I know John Freeman does quite a lot with it, doesn't he? I think he writes stories occasionally for it. Yeah,
yeah. Him and Dave wrote Death Duty together, which was broken up into eight.
Okay.
Over eight issues. So, he actually gave me my first pages to letter when I started realizing that I could do that. So, I was a graphic designer for 10 years that sort of was itching to make comics, and I didn't realize that, oh, I can just do a little bit of it, not the whole thing.
Right. Okay.
So I sort of chose lettering because it sort of matched my skill set, and I sent off a load of emails to editors and creators, and they've got back to me and said, yeah, I've got some pages, I can't bother to do it.
Right, okay.
So, he gave me a chance, and yeah, the pages kept coming, and he eventually asked me to assist and edit on that.
Oh, cool.
So
I see.
It was sort of seeing how he did it, and the feedback I was getting from Dave about my feedback was quite encouraging. He found it quite helpful, the notes and things I was putting out, and then I got the brazen idea that I could do it myself.
So do you think, as an editor on a small press book, you're very much like herding cats, aren't you, to a certain... Do you think you're more inclusive in the sort of creative element of an anthology because you've got to be a guide as to subject matter and mood and vibe for each issue, or do you see it like that?
Yes, I do. My focus is on giving the best platform to the work I include.
Right.
So I don't want to accept work that's going to be outshone by the things I put next to it. They all have to stand alone and say what they want to say and be the best comic they can be on their own, while at the same time working as a full issue that is coherent and has, if not a through line or a theme, it has to hang together as though you've read a single issue rather than something you dip in and out of.
So it has to have its own identity, you mean, per issue? Yeah. So do you think a running order is a very important thing with an anthology? You've got each story, you can't clash with stories up against each other. Do you carefully consider what you put next to each other, for example?
I do, but I do it very much through feel, really. It's all my own personal opinion on what's it next to what and what works, really. And it can be a lot of things. It can be the way the one story makes you feel, sort of thing, and how that leads into the next. Do you need a bit of levity after something that's quite powerful? Sometimes it can come down to just needing a splash of colour between two black and white pieces to lift that, you know? So there's nothing that I can really say, I have a set of rules that have to be abided by. It's very much feel and flow, and that's probably not helpful to anyone.
No. Exactly what I was hoping you were going to say, because I feel that in some of your issues. Is it Lucas Kowalczyk? You put his, use some of his stories, didn't you? You did use the football thug one, wasn't it?
The hooliganism one, yeah. His little colourform cutout one.
That's it. And that really broke between two stories for me. You can tell that was a crafted to stick where it was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other sort of examples of that sort of thing that you've done that you've thought, I don't really want to put that as the lead story, for example. I don't want to put that as the end story. Did you want to speak about any particular stories that you know?
Two of my favourites, actually, and it's going to sound like I'm a bit playing favouritism, but it's Chris Sides. I've had two pieces written by Chris, and the trouble is, the reason they're my favourites has nothing to do with what's in the final issue. It's all about the process.
Right.
Because I've been quite lucky that with the first issue, I got to completely curate it. So I've been working on lettering for about 8 months or so. So I had a big list of people that I'd worked with directly or indirectly that I could send out to and say, look, I'm trying to get this together.
Yeah.
And a lot of people responded, and I got to pretty much work from the ground up on all of the comics in the first issue. So we got to read scripts and make changes to scripts before art got done, and, you know, and got it all the way through.
Yeah.
And that was really the first issue was the statement of this is what we're trying to do. And since then, I have accepted more complete work that fits with the remit.
Yeah,
which has been quite nice, because that takes a bit of the pressure off of a page count. I try not to just fill pages, but if it fits, it fits, and I'm not going to turn my nose up at that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got to thank, actually...
Go on, mate, sorry.
Sorry, I've got to thank Dirty Rotten Comic, actually, for the last couple of issues. They've sent a lot of creators my way that they haven't been able to fit in.
Yeah.
And they've been really helpful and generous in...
Yeah.
Sharing.
I genuinely feel that. I mean, I don't think it's a secret, but you've put a story in that I've done, and we've talked a lot about it, haven't we, over the period? And I don't want to give it away, but there's been a change made to it, which you suggested, and I completely agree with.
Did you? I've been sort of wondering if you did.
No. I didn't want to say no. I mean, you're the editor. At the end of the day, you're the editor, I think, is my answer. But no, I completely agree with it. And I can see where you're coming from. And it changes the story. I don't want to give it away, but it does a bit, doesn't it?
You know, yes, it does.
It changes the attitude of the story almost. And the... I'm sure at some point I'll post the last page, you know, a significant number of months after you produce it, and you know, when you bring it out. But it's interesting. For me it was like, oh right, and I'm seeing it from a whole different angle because of the editorial input, which I thought was a great thing. You know, it shows that you're. We had a couple of people write in. I think it was Simon who stressed the importance of curation. Simon Russell wrote in, rather than just collecting strips, which is what a lot of anthologies seemingly do. And I think to show that level of thought around something, and you sat there, I know you've done a couple of changes to it, as well as literally taking a page out, which just changed it. And I was really impressed with that, Ken, I have to say. And I think generally in anthologies in this country, that needs doing. I think there's a lot of filler these days in anthologies. Mm-hmm. But not in yours and not in Dark Matter, I have to say. Yeah.
I think it being kind of real, as it were, like, and kind of trying to get the best out of the work, and using the fact that there's more than one of you, you can be a collaborative effort and bring in more than one kind of perspective. That's the strength of it, and should be kind of played upon. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to
I want to discuss something with someone, you know, rather than just say, oh yeah, we'll take one of your stories. Yeah, we'll take one of yours. And then you don't hear anything. And then 6 months later, it comes out, you know?
Yeah. So, for example, there's you spoke about it quite highly, actually. It's in the second issue, I think. And it's the Chris Sides one, and it's the Instagram comic.
Yes, I like that.
Where it's just photos from Instagram with comments, with the comments section next to it, and the whole narrative plays out.
Yeah.
That's right. The artist is Maximilian Meyer, and it's written by Chris.
That's great.
It's really not. It's really not. And we went from Chris writing this script and sort of saying, not quite sure how we're going to go about this, to it becoming less of an illustration exercise and more of a design exercise to sell the story.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting process to see how the script started and what actually ended up on the page. And it's easily one of the strongest pieces that we've done.
Really interesting framework. And to me, it typifies what you're going for, what I think you're going for anyway, is the experimentation in and the real life situations combined, you know. Yeah, is that something you think is your sort of motto for the book, is it? Or
I mean, it's called Sliced because I want not everyday stories, but relatable stories. I don't want fantastical. I want relatable, because what we're showcasing is the mechanics of comics, not necessarily story first, but how the story is told and why comics is a unique narrative form and why it's so effective and how it can be pulled and stretched. And I know in the last issue there are pages there where a lot of people going, well, that's not comics, but to me it is. And I think there's a case for what the form is and how far it can be taken.
I think we're definitely, it's a really experimental period. I mean, we've had Gareth Hopkins on the show. And his stuff is comics, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, people might not agree, but I definitely see a sequential flow to it all, you know.
Yeah.
And we've got an interesting one from Gareth in the next issue.
Yeah,
which you're involved in as well, actually.
I am, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, weirdly. That was a bit of fan art I sent you.
What we've done is we've got a single page of Gareth's abstract artwork, and we've got four writers to work Marvel style over it.
Yeah.
Nice. So it should be the same artwork with four different stories and interpretations of it from writers.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting... Yeah, I did it whilst watching TV. And it's really... Just having the panel layout sometimes...
Crap TV, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, well, it's always, mate. Yeah, you know me. It's... really good. Yeah. No, really interesting, yeah. I mean, I think the UK small press scene does have a lot of anthologies, doesn't it?
Yeah. Honest answers. There's a lot of anthologies out there at the moment, especially in the small press scene. If you've been to a convention and checked out the small press tables, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But that aside, what do you think is the quality level of these anthologies in the current market?
An average, I'd put, you know, if I had to average them out, I think there's some, I'd say it's not great at the moment. I'd say they've improved, certainly. But I'm certainly someone who's walked to a small press table, bought an anthology, and thought, like half an hour later, thought, fuck me, I wish I'd never bought this.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
This might be hard, this conversation about mentioning names.
Yeah. I think the problem with that, as the problem with anthology and small press as it is with, if Marvel put one out, or Dark Horse, or anyone put one out, is you'll have two, three stories that are brilliant, and five or six stories that you're not bothered about.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think with that role, the editor definitely comes in there.
Yeah. Sort of. Yeah. And my policy at Down the Tubes used to be that I would review each story in anthology, and I've changed that now. I spoke to John about it, and I've changed it, and I will review the three or four I like.
Fair enough.
I ain't got the time in my life to review every. Do you know what I mean? And a lot of them aren't that great. Yeah.
That's
totally fair.
God,
as I said, Tony Eastman review is a review, though. Do you know what I mean?
It is now. Yeah. I've gone. The tiger's appeared, hasn't he? In the last few weeks, if you'll notice.
It's not just kind of like, oh, yeah, this is a good story about aliens. The next story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you actually read it and take it on board and pick stuff up on it.
Yeah. And if you, it's completely off the subject, if you look at recently at my reviews, I've been pestered by a number of people, and not all of them, but a couple of the reviews I've done recently wouldn't have been posted unless if these people hadn't pestered me, because I fucking didn't like their stuff. So tiger has been revealed. Yeah. Someone wrote to me yesterday and said, I'll see you doing honest reviews. And I've always done honest reviews. I've avoided the ones I didn't like.
Yeah.
So we can read those reviews at downthetubes.net.
But I've always appreciated Tony's reviewing because...
Thank you, mate.
Even if you haven't sort of agreed with everything I've put in or haven't liked everything that's put out, you need to know opinions to learn.
Yeah. So it doesn't always make you a friend of everyone, though, Ken, to be fair. Yeah.
Who needs friends, eh?
I know. I've got you three. It's fine.
Yeah. we didn't get into comics to make friends.
If you don't want your
depends on the next review, I suppose.
When you say if you don't want your work reviewed, don't send it out for a review.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you have it in a bubble and not send it out and just sell it.
I am all for. I personally couldn't give two flying fucks what quite a lot of reviewers would think around the stuff I do. I'm not bothered. You know what I mean? Mm. I'm of an age where I create stuff because I enjoy creating it.
Yeah.
You know, and I like to think there's a little bit of me in it, but... not all over it, but... but I think there's a lot of anthologies about at the moment. I wrote a little list. Shall I read through them all?
Go for it, yeah.
Okay. You got Zarjazz and Dog Breath. They're great guys. The 2000 AD stuff they do, really good. Meanwhile, from Soaring Penguin, Reeds, which I really like, from Avery Hill, Dark Matter, we spoke about, Forest Tales, that's a good one, isn't it, everyone?
Yep.
Sliced, Psychedelic Journal of Time Travel, I think we've had Owen on the show, haven't we? Did he come on the show at Melksham?
It's the Psychedelic Journal of the West this year, isn't it?
That's right, there is, isn't there? Yeah.
Yes. We talked to him at Bristol.
That's right. Dead Singers, Dirty Rotten Comics, mentioned them already, Paper Cuts and Ink Stains. There's the Thought Bubble special, which is good, which comes out. It's always very quality. Outray, which is a Scandinavian series written in English. Comic House, which I know you've been involved in, Dan, haven't you?
Yep. And Vince. Shortly.
And Vince soon. Tiny Pencil, One Beat Zines, T-Pub, which you've spoken about in the past, Decadence Comics, and Save Our Souls. And they are regularly put out, you know, anthologies.
I'm going to add to that list, Tony. You got the Big Punch magazine, the quarterly. BPM. That one's quite unique in the fact that they're doing something kind of like a 2000 AD sort of model, telling strips, but they're all set within this sort of same universe, as it were. Doing some unique things there. Disconnected Press, they started off doing their anthologies. You've got some bigger anthologies, you could say, like Mike Garley's Dead Roots. I know it's been out for a few years now, but that's a big anthology piece. The Hellbound Media guys do Shock Value, which is several different sort of horror-themed anthologies. Dark Matter, of course, we described. The Grime, which is the Tom Ward, Welsh, and McCulloch crew.
You're in that, aren't you?
I'm in issue 2, which is why everyone should get it. You'll be able to get an issue from me at my table if you see me at any shows.
Fucking hell.
Shameless.
Or if you give him a bell. Give him a bell on 07489. No,
but then you've also got, 100% biodegradable, which we talked about. Andythology. Andy Bloor put together a little anthology, which is very good. Yeah, yeah. And also, one of my books of the year last year was Girls Like You, which is an Irish book. Which
I really must read that. I must get around to reading that, yeah.
Did
we mention also, Forest Tales?
Forest Tales, yeah, we briefly totally mentioned it. It's a very good.
There's also Future Quake and Something Wicked.
Yes,
from Zarjazz guys, aren't they? Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
And we've talked about to Dave Brown about that. I've got a few things in their books, and they're really great guys. They're not like the sort of networking guys, because they're very much sort of 2000 AD and horror focused, aren't they? But they put out some absolutely excellent stuff, and I thoroughly recommend them as a place to go if you've got a story.
I mean, that's a lot of anthologies currently out,
and that's small press.
That's ignoring stuff like Viz, for example.
Yeah,
so, everyone forgets Classic. This. Viz is still on the shelves every month.
Well, let's see what some of our listeners said, because when we when we first put out the shout out, we said, "What are your favourite anthologies?" Mark Lamming at Monkey Mark, he said Warrior 2000 AD, early DHP, early Creepies, Bullet, Action and Warlord.
Yep.
He reads a few comics, that lad, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Rick Jackson said Eerie and Creepy are still my go-to anthology books. That's two that I really, really want to read.
Oh, I've got a bundle. I bought a load in New York really cheaply. And Vampirella, you should add to that as well. Really great stuff. Yeah, brilliant stuff.
JP Jordan said The Tangled Web of Spider-Man was freaking great. Have you read that one?
I have. I can't remember off the top of my head. I've had so many comics in my fuddled, drug-addled brain. But the was that a different story each issue, or was that a series of stories in an issue? That's getting close to what is the definition of an anthology.
Yeah.
Is an anthology something that's two stories, or is it an anthology got to be more?
I thought Tangled Web was a different story every issue, I think. I could be completely wrong.
Marvel put out Strange Tales as well, where they got a lot of underground artists, indie artists, and that was really good. I really like that. Yeah.
They used to do that Complete Spider-Man, had the four issues of Spider-Man reprinted every month for the UK one.
I'd put that as an anthology.
At Mr. Chris 1980, new listener there, Ireland is ace. Introduced me to a much wider range of comics than I was used to. The Cubes are great too. The Cubes? What are the Cubes?
Not familiar with that.
Is that something in Ireland? It must be.
Well, I've not read Ireland, I'm afraid. Yeah. Okay.
There's a lot of great comics coming out from Ireland for small press comics.
Oh, God.
They're doing really well over there.
Let's have a look. At Radio on the Comic, he said, too many. I'd say Kramer's Ergot. Is that it? DHP, American Comics, Ireland again. Paper Jam. CC.
Yeah.
And the much missed Moam, Meat House, and Pop Gun.
Yeah. Yeah. But let's not forget Off Life as well in this country. We keep forgetting that. And we talked about that a few months ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
At Comics Anonymous, he said, I love Twisted Dark from T-Pub Comics, along with The Grime. Good man. And Comic House. Mainstream, I dabbled with 2000 AD, but Exploits of Spider-Man in the early 90s from Marvel UK was a revelation.
Yep.
Another recent gem is Tales of Mystery and Imagination from Terrier Studios.
Oh, I've not seen that.
I'm not familiar with them.
Alan Henderson at Shadow 1972. Only Double Feature was a great anthology.
Yeah.
I heard that. I never read those.
I think that was two stories, though, wasn't it? Didn't some of Jay and Silent Bob appear in that? I've got a feeling they did.
Okay.
He also wrote into me and he said A1, which is obviously great. Taboo and Space Junk. I never read Space Junk, although I did see it about. Not really sure what. Is that a humour one, I think? Yeah.
Not familiar with any of those titles there.
Right.
those last three.
There was a vast list here. I'll just read out a couple more. At M Phoenix UK, met him at Nottingham, lovely bloke. He said Cinema Purgatorio by Avatar.
Yeah, that's the one.
Avatar Press is really good.
Was that me and you bought it off Kev O'Neill? Was it you or was it my mate Dave? We went and bought it off Kevin O'Neill and he was a bit
scary. It must have been your mate Dave.
My mate Dave, okay, yeah.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Also, British Showcase. That's one that's been around for a little bit.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this then. Dark Knight 3, right?
Yeah.
Is that an anthology?
I just think
it's written by different artists.
I just think
two different stories, but some, you know.
I've not read it. After that, the second one, it was such a car crash.
Yeah, I've left that in the past. Do you know what I mean? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if I was to say my opinion, I think for me personally, I'm not interested in it. It seems more like about
just a backup story.
And also just more, that series is more about just a money thing. You know, because people are going to lap it up rather than it being something, you know.
Great. Did the original Sin City appear in Dark Horse Presents?
Yes, it was in Dark Horse Presents, as was Concrete, which is another great series.
Yeah.
They've had a few goes at it, haven't they, recently? Yeah. It's been out and cancelled and out again, I think.
Yeah.
And you had Blood from Neil Adams and all sorts of things. It's great like breeding ground for stuff. I think Mr. Monster was in it and some great stuff in it. Yeah,
well, like you mentioned earlier, you can kind of try something out in an anthology, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If you've not like done a whole issue on the character or story or whatever.
Yeah.
Another one that was mentioned, at Hugo Boylan, he said Heavy Metal is pretty consistently excellent.
Oh, of course. I've got a couple of issues of that in front of me, and that is just incredible stuff. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. And so was Epic Magazine, which is very similar to it at the time. Epic was great as well.
Yeah.
You got stuff like The Last of Galactus story, you got Dreadstar that appeared in Epic, stuff that continued elsewhere as well, you know?
Yeah.
With Heavy Metal, you'd pick up stuff and there'd be stuff in there that I'd never imagined I'd be reading this comic. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. It was a bit saucy when we were young as well.
Yeah.
Love a bit of sauce.
Lucas Testro from the Radioactive Lounge, the Australian podcast, he's written into me and he said DC's The Unexpected and Marvel Strange Tales. So I agree with him on that one as well. As did Jonathan Wyke, who said he mentions Heavy Metal and Epic Illustrated as well as A1, which are good. And Paul Moore, I'll just say another one, Hulk Weekly, Warrior, Epic, and Wednesday Comics. Did anyone read the Wednesday Comics that came out?
I heard a lot about it. That was big in the States, wasn't it?
Really good. Yeah. It's like Sunday newspaper size.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Different story, yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't that like in an effort to kind of get back comics back to kind of the storytelling and not about the kind of the prestige?
It was like format. A disposable, yeah. It was more as a disposable. Yeah, no, it was really good. There is a hardback of it, which I've never bought, but that's some real talent. Dave Gibbons wrote a story in it. There's some real talent in it.
Nice.
Eduardo Rizzo, lots of people, yeah.
Nice. We could read that. There's a lot of fantastic anthologies that will be here all night if we read them out. So let's move on to the next poll, shall we?
Okay.
So our second poll was... it wasn't really a poll. The first one was a poll. I just asked a question. I'm so used to doing two polls a week. It were.
Oh.
Yeah. But our only poll for this week was a bit of a tough question, if you ask me. So if you had to pick one, what would draw you to an anthology? Okay. So the four answers were artwork, writing, creators, and print quality.
Okay.
Now...
You know. I answer creators.
I would have put a creators.
What would you have said, Ken?
I don't think I'll be right, though. I don't think I'm right. I said creators, but people like badges and things like that these days,
artwork. They would.
Yeah.
I answered as a reader and artwork, but as an editor, it's all about creators.
Okay.
Right. So in fourth place with 2% was print quality, which...
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I think
I would argue that digital anthology.
All right.
That people expect a certain level. If it's not a certain level, they won't pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing as some of the sort of blurry crap you get in the small press scene that you can't really make out word balloons and stuff like that, print quality's got to be.
I think it's something that's overlooked an awful lot.
We're spoiled, I think, for that at the moment, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah, it's becoming inexcusable because there is such easy access to good reproduction.
Yeah, I think so.
When I got the latest Cognition through from you, Ken, it's absolutely fantastic. That was just... I'd mentioned a couple of anthologies that do the things well, and the Cognition one you sent through is blinding. Everything was so well done. The prints, the comic, it's the way it should be done. It's absolutely,
Yeah, I really like Cognition, mate. Yeah, it's one of my favourite things this year. Definitely. Yeah. Really good.
Cheers. Yeah. But again, I've got no excuses. I work in the print trade. I mean, if I'd have put out something, I mean...
It's a question of pride, isn't it? If you put out something that looks rough, you just feel bad about it.
It's not even pride. It's just,
it's just got to be done that way.
There'd be no excuse for it.
Yeah. Can't live with the shame.
Cognition's done with a real sense of style, and you know, design's a big thing for you, isn't it? As well, I know that for a fact. That's right, is it?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's my background. I mean, it's so logos and to us, and a lot with the lettering as well. I mean, you set the tone, and I think sometimes the advantage I have with the slice with sliced is that I letter about 90% of what's there.
Okay.
And it's an opportunity to pull it together a bit more and give it a continuity through something that's a bit sort of intangible, if you see what I mean. The reader might not notice straight off, but it's there sort of holding it together a bit.
Yeah, interesting.
Right, so the third place was writing with 14%.
Wow. Oh, no, we're in trouble, aren't we? People just like pretty artwork, don't we? You know, it's like the actual writing of it, only 14%. Seriously, folks, come on.
But the question was, what would make you pick it up?
Yeah.
Yeah. What would draw you to an anthology? I think writing's a difficult one because you can't necessarily tell straight away, can you?
It's hard to gauge before we've actually read it.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It was one of our more...
A follow-up question might be, which would you reread?
Yeah.
What would make you reread an anthology, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you weren't there when I was doing this.
All these troglodytes, you know.
Yeah, yeah. In second place, with 33%, was creators. So, the number one was artwork with 52%.
Don't tell artists this. Artists will be going, oh, I'm brilliant. Yeah. You know, do you want to work with me? Maybe I'll let you. Fuck off.
What I'd say, like, with the argument is, like, the first thing you get when you see the comic is the artwork, and once you can get the reader in, and then you keep them there with a good writing, that's the only thing I can say in defense of that. I mean, if you've got kind of your artwork is a bit ugly, not readable, or there's no quality to it, you won't get that chance for the person to pick it up and check out the writing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a bit. And that's where the ugliness of commerce.
Yeah. Have you ever had this experience, like, where you pick up you pick up an anthology and get it because of, like, artwork of one strip, but then that particular strip isn't as good as you thought, and it was one that you weren't necessarily thinking about that actually stands out?
Definitely.
Happened to me a couple of times.
I mean, sometimes where the break in the book, you know, remember you always used to open a Marvel comic, you'd always open it on the adverts, wouldn't you? It'd always be the Hostess fruit pies or something, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can pick a comic company, it'll almost always be the same page. You know, it's just where it happens to fall, the weight and the staples and, you know, stuff like that. And if that page isn't great, you go, oh my god, and you put it down. You know what I mean?
Because I was going to mention that to you, Ken, but you do yours slightly differently. But, like, when you're kind of editing an anthology and you go, right, I've got these five stories, I've got two which are absolutely stand out, and the other three are kind of middling. Would you do, like, say if you made a portfolio, you'd have the front story and the back story absolute highlights, or would you have the front story and the middle story absolute highlights?
Actually, because when I was thinking about this earlier tonight, I was going to make the comparison to putting together a design portfolio.
To
a certain extent, you have to open well and you have to close well. And if you have anything to hide, you put it towards the middle. But I've had too many job interviews where they just went straight to the fucking middle and saw the crappiest bit of shit I had in there. So the rule is, don't put anything in there that you're really embarrassed about. And there isn't in what I've done. There really isn't.
Yeah.
There you go. Fair enough. We had a few replies to this poll as well, which brought up some interesting comments. Would you like to hear them, gents?
Yes, we would. Yes, we would, Vincent.
Good. Alfie Gallagher, he said, the feeling that there's a clever editorial control behind it, creating a thread through all the work, not just a load of mates chucking at a wall. That's what he likes about anthologies, which makes sense.
It's a shame. Yeah, we were planning that, so we can say that.
Oh dear. Sarah Harris at Implausible 17, she said, I've gone artwork, but if you had theme as an option, I'd have picked that. E.g., I always pick up horror anthologies. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Emmett OC underscore, one of the draws of Negative Burn for me was the variety of stories. It was eclectic and experimental. So there you go. The variety is also a big thing for people. Dead Canary Comics, they said, such a tough one. They went with artwork, but creators was way up there too. I think they're also coming at it from the, you know, from being an editorial background as well. I think people in who work as like editors, creators is always going to be one of the big choices, isn't it? Always. At SuperAndyT83, he says it's the process and artwork that draws you in. Writing makes it memorable. The creators become people to watch for next time.
I mean, that's a fantastic calling card, isn't it? If you see a creator or a writer, you see in there and you think, right, I'll check out their other work. Yeah. And obviously, with the strength of the digital comic, there's the links straight away.
I think, and in that brings up the print quality, and like, you know, if you're picking a book up, imagine if you're a contributor to that and you're really proud of the story you've done and the print quality's bad, you know.
Yeah, it reflects badly.
But it's those sort of things that are out of your control, isn't it? Okay, at Nick Prolix, The Sheep and the Wolves.
Sheep and the Wolves,
Production values is always going to be the big draw, i.e. McSweeney's 13 and Graphic Fiction and the Mammoth anthologies all look great and are books you'd want to have as objects in their own right. The range and quality of curated work they showcase is also great. It was nice to get those responses about actually print quality, because that was the fourth choice. just thought, is no anyone going to vote for this? Yeah, but because I know it's important to me. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have picked it as my... you know, selection, but Kevin.
No, but I think it's like a given. Like a kind of, if you went to a film with awful sound quality, you'd that's fucking shit sound quality. You'd expect it to be to do its job and be good, and it would only kind of flag up if it was shit, which you don't want.
I think that goes from a contributor's point of view as well. That they are putting a certain amount of trust in submitting work to you that you will handle it appropriately and do your best to disseminate it in the best way possible.
Yeah,
I would.
And that's sort of the job as well.
I've had my hands burnt before with I've done artwork for people and stuff, and after the way it's been handled afterwards, it's like, oh Jesus Christ, that's really bad, and it could have done better. But I'm to the point now. Once I've done, I can control this section here, and I'm going to do my best on it. And once that's passed on, what they do with that then, I try not to get too hung up about it, lest it kind of... you don't want to get to the point where you're sticking your oar in someone else's business and, look, you should have done X, Y, and Z when...
Yeah.
I mean, so
but it's muddy where your business... It depends, I guess. If they're paying you a page rate, I guess your job's done and you don't have to worry. But to a certain point, if you retain ownership over it, you do get a say in...
Yeah, true. The
responsibility of how that gets put out, because if it ultimately will be a reflection on you as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I've never done an anthology or worked. Most of the stuff I've done is for other people. So if I'm being tasked with drawing someone else's comic, I kind of that's my bit, and I take a kind of a professional approach, as in I'm there to do this. And I've offered up kind of advice before, and sometimes people are quite. Happy to accept it, and then other times not so much. But the only I'm only offering it up to try and make the thing better, as opposed to knocking it.
Yeah, it's constructive.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think most of us can take constructive criticism. Not everyone.
Yeah.
But
I don't know what you mean, Dan. Sorry.
You've got to be careful of like offering up what's the word? Unrequested constructive criticism.
We know a creator, don't we, who's just some blokes just emailed him and started giving him loads of advice about his art, and you know, fuck off.
There's a time and a place, and sometimes people
they offer up sort of like, wouldn't that character say this, or could you have written that? It's like, well, yeah, I could have, but I didn't. So
it's like people occasionally come up to me and go, oh, you should really do this on the podcast. And I feel like saying, don't care what you think. Fuck off. You know what I mean?
Well, you should say that.
Thank you.
He's the public face.
I'm the public face of the podcast. It's been said before.
Well, not after this episode.
Yeah.
I don't come around and say you shouldn't lag that pipe like that. You should lag it the other way.
yeah.
Fixed plastic strips. Don't want to do like that.
I always like invite
opinions like.
Yeah.
Penis like arseholes. Everyone's
called. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like when people give you advice about your job and they go, oh, what do you do? And you tell them and they go, oh, yeah, I met someone who does your job and they did this shit and they did that and all that sort of thing. Yeah. And, oh, really? Oh, brilliant. Okay, thank you. Yeah, cheers for comparing me to some tosser you met. And then I go, what do you do? And they go, oh, I'm a plumber. And I say, I had a plumber camera the other day. He stole all my stuff, tried to shag my wife, and he's a right wanker. And they go, oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
But I've heard stories with comedians doing the same thing. Like they say, oh, I'm a comedian. And they say, oh, look, here's a couple of good jokes for you.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
God. Really?
Yeah. Tell us a joke. Sing us a song. Yeah. That sort of thing. Yeah.
There's a time and a place for jokes. There's never any on this show.
Yeah.
I'd like to give you a professional martial arts instructor and said, what do you do? He said, I'm a martial arts instructor. Well, you show us some and then you immediately put them in hospital. For life support. Good, there you go. Yeah. You might only get asked that once.
I love the way you live your life, Dan.
Yeah. That's where being a mopper out at a
I wonder if
show,
sewage workers have the same problem.
Similar to being an editor on an anthology, isn't it? Yeah. Hey.
Oh dear.
No comment. I haven't. No, I haven't actually. I haven't actually given out too many rejections, to tell the truth.
All right. Okay.
It's quite interesting.
A bit like my love life.
Which is also like being a sewage worker.
couple. You feel more dirty when you. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long, long shower.
It's that time.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this bit.
Where it all goes wrong.
Yeah. It's usually about this time, 9:15.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm at work tomorrow, so I can go as long as you like. Let's keep going.
The Horlicks has kicked in and we're ready to go. right. Anyway, a couple more comments before we leave this one. At Kevin Cooling, it's always been about the art for me. It's led to having lots of books from lots of arts, but hardly any complete stories.
Interesting. I do like that. Do you remember when it was difficult to get Marvel comics and you couldn't get a complete run?
Yeah.
And you go in and you pick the odd issue up and you'd read it. And you think that's quite good. I wonder what's gonna happen the next one, but you can never guarantee you'd get the next one.
And if you had that complete arc, it was a golden arc, wasn't it? If you look back on it now, it's probably a shit story. But because it was the only one you had the complete arc of, it was like the best thing ever and you'd read it and reread it all the time.
Yeah. I'd think, what's going to happen next? Oh, I'm not actually sure I'm going to find this comic again, you know. There you go. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. Well done, Kev.
At Keep Consane, he said, I'm mostly visual, but honestly, it will be a combination of all of them. I'd have a flicker through and decide. Love them. I think that's a nice one to end on.
We love them, don't we?
Yeah. There's a vast, diverse range of anthologies out there. Basically, there's something for everyone, isn't there, really?
And I think you need to. I think you need to just keep the quality up. I will go back to an anthology because the previous bit one has just been good, not because it's been about a certain subject. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many out there that are just like, even books like Dark Matter or Slice or stuff like that. That, you know, has almost a certain vibe to it. You know, I go back to them because they're good.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember seeing a couple of comments like people were sort of saying they're good tasters. So you'd see a creator and then you'd search out their work afterwards. I think that's great. I think that's great that a lot of people do that. It certainly gives you hope if you're taking part in anthologies, isn't it? Because that's kind of, in a way, that's what you want to happen, isn't it? You know, you want to have a good piece of work, but at the same time, you want to gain some more people following your work.
Yeah.
I hope that happens. I put a creator glossary at the back of Slice to try and help that along.
Which is great for reviewers, by the way. Thank you for that.
Is it?
Very good. Yeah, it saves me searching Twitter for someone. Yeah.
I think that's a nice little touch. I really do.
Yeah.
Kind of shine a spotlight on them.
And it's only right. I mean, remember, I'll say the title because the person creating it is no longer creating it, but Dog Breath, they used to write to you and say, oh, do yourself a little bio at the back. You know, that's quite a common thing, I think, for anthologies, isn't it? And I put something along the lines, I usually put some shit like my hips don't lie or something, and I think I put keen splongophile, which is just something that the editors decided to print. I don't think the editor actually looked it up or anything. And it's actually something the Marquis de Sade was into. I won't go into it, but it involves murder.
Shall I read it?
Okay, go on.
Let me Google.
Yes, is it Dan's Urban Dictionary Corner? Oh,
Dictionary Corner with Dan again. Yeah. And I put that. Okay. I only put it for a joke and ended up putting it in, but I thought it was quite funny now.
You're seriously going to take on Susie Dent, Dan. Be careful.
It's trying to find it.
John always used to put stuff like, can you write a bio? And I just wrote My Hips Don't Lie on Down the Tubes. I thought that was quite good.
How do you feel about bio writing in general? I've been asked to do it a couple of times.
Yeah.
Do you find it difficult?
Yeah, a little bit. It's always a bit uncomfortable just sort of bigging yourself up, isn't it?
Yeah.
I cannot find that. It's not coming up.
Oh, I can't remember how you spell it now. I'll tell you what it is. I think the Marquis de Sade, because I think everything he did was sort of dreams, wasn't it? I don't think it was he in prison when he made all this stuff up. I can't remember. Anyway, so he would kidnap people from the streets of Paris, cut their open their guts, and have sex with their steaming guts as they died.
Oh, okay.
I thought everyone's got to have a hobby, haven't they? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Well, that's quite good.
Oh, I call that a Ruby Thursday. Oh, lovely. God, it is that time, isn't it?
You just call it a Thursday.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
naked anyway, Tuesday, and then that Thursday. Yeah, so anthologies. I think we've covered quite a lot of things about anthologies, haven't we?
Yeah,
I think we've done good.
Yeah. I think there's some. You don't really see them much from the big two anymore, do you? You used to have a lot, and I used to enjoy them. You had like Marvel Comics Presents and.
Yeah,
stuff like that. DC Comics, DC Action. They had Action Comics had a weekly, didn't they? And it was an anthology. And you had Superman and Batman and Tarzan Family, Adventure Comics, House of Mystery, The Witching Hour, Strange Adventures, Strange Sports, Waste. You know, they had all these books, but you don't really see them much anymore from the big two, do you? I don't think so. Anyway,
I don't think so.
Isn't that how Chris Welgus got into DC's radar though?
Maybe.
Anthology work with them.
What was he working on?
Well, you thinking of what's the Rachel Deering anthology?
In the Dark.
Yeah. And he did, I don't know, actually. Was it? Oh, I think you're right. It was CMYK, wasn't it?
That's the one.
Yeah, which was the Vertigo book. Yes, there is that one. I've not seen that for a while, actually. Are they still doing that? I'm not sure. I saw one about this time last year because Jessica Martin was in it.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen one of those for a while.
Yeah, that is that's an exception. Yeah, definitely can. Yeah, that was very good as well. I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. So anthologies, people. You know, I would honestly say that when I started in small press and stuff, I didn't really pick any up. I wasn't really an anthology person. I've certainly read more. Certainly since we started this show, actually, I've read even more.
We get sent the odd one. We get quite a few in at Down the Tubes.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we see. Yeah.
And you do find some absolute gems in them.
So, yeah, you do. Yeah, you really do.
So thank you to everyone that got in touch with whatever you said. You know, like I say, we can only read out so much, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
And thank you for your input from behind the editorial desk, Ken.
Yeah.
The truth is I'm just groping along.
Hang on.
You're on the right show there, my friend.
Yeah, that's why we got him on. Yep.
trying to put out what I want to read.
Yeah,
that's the way.
I really like. We've talked about it. I really like what you're doing. I think it's spot on at the moment. It really is. Yeah. Done with a good attitude towards it as well. Definitely.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And speaking of attitude, I think we know what time it is. It's time for action, Dan. Cue the music. Yes. It's this week's Action Dan question. Do you think people wait for this every week? I know I do.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, what was I meant to say there?
This is the weekly part of the show where we just ask Dan, we test Dan Butcher on his 80s action movie skills. Now he's 3 for 3 at the moment. It's the first of 5. So, you know, Dan said he was an 80s action movie master. Didn't you, Dan?
We won this. It will be over by Christmas. first five.
Yeah. Yes.
We're almost there. Almost there.
We're almost there, and we've had some great.
And
questions.
Go on for another 3 years.
Yeah. Yes. But as we've got a guest on the show, we're mixing it up this week. Mr. Ken Reynolds has an Action Dad question. So it's going to be live, on the spot, in the studio, right now. So, Ken, do you have your question ready for Daniel?
Yeah, I'm going to get a lot of hate for this because I'm nowhere near the big action fan that I know a lot of the people that know you are.
I know you're more a sort of art house fan.
You're far too busy.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
So, Mr. Daniel Butcher, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yes.
So, Commando was the main 80s action film that I saw at a far too young age. And it's a two-part question.
Okay.
How did the main baddie get dispatched, and what was Arnie's one-liner?
This is Bennett, isn't it? And when he launches like a pipe through his midsection into like a kind of boiler thing behind him, and steam shoots out, and he goes, "Let us some steam, Bennett." What? Well, let us some steam, Bennett.
Yay! Was he the one in the weird sort of chainmail shirt thing?
Yeah.
That's the one.
He never looked like a match
with the weird
tattoo. No. Just looked like some bloke from down the pub.
Do you know who else he was in Mad Max 2? He played the biker with the assless leather chaps.
Yes.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yes. And he was also in the Christopher Lambert film. what was the Fortress? That was it.
That is he. I saw him at one of those memorabilia shows signing autographs once.
Did you get it? Did you get his autograph? Did you get him to sign your chest?
Another fact, he used to be in the SAS.
Oh, he did he? Okay.
Did he? We better stop talking.
We could probably do Arnie, let's face it. Arnie, you know, a bodybuilder, isn't he? Yeah.
I saw this Arnie GIF today that absolutely fucking killed me. I'll send it to you guys. I'll put it up on the pod. But he essentially blows on his thumb and tweaks his bicep. He blows on his forefinger and tweaks his bicep. And then he sort of like questions and blows his thumb and then quickly grabs his blows his little finger and quickly grabs his crotch. And it was just like, I did not expect to see that.
Why? I don't know where you find all the stuff on the internet.
Oh, it wasn't Reddit. It wasn't Reddit.
I do get the feeling that if he'd have stood for president this year, he'd have got it, wouldn't he?
He'd have killed.
Yeah.
To be fair,
disturbing.
I said he'd have put a.
Unfortunately, gonna work out for you.
Yeah. I think you could have put a carrot.
I've done a couple already.
Oh dear, we love you, Arnold. So there you go, Dan Butcher is 4-3 up. He's
could take the title next.
He's
week.
Got match point. He's getting excited. So
we'll have a proper question.
Yes, send us your question and answer to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
Be the last one.
It could be the last one. Or if you stump him, then Dan Butcher will draw you a random sketch.
I still owe one for Sam for last week.
Oh yeah, it was Sam Webster, wasn't it? Last week, he was very pleased, bragging about it online. We saw you.
So, can you beat Dan Butcher? Let's see next week, shall we? So there you go. It was Action Dan. Well done, Dan.
Well done.
Thank you.
I want to do a clap, but I don't know how the microphone will pick that.
Just do clap sound effect.
Clap. No, I'm not going to do that. It's enough work putting the Rambo music behind it. So, what shout outs have we got, gents?
I've got a couple.
Go for it.
Right, sitting on the train this week, and you know what, I'm bad enough just in everyday life, but sitting on the train talking to people is not my bag. I've got to be honest with you. Rarely do I even make eye contact with the person sitting opposite me. But this week, I got chatting to a lady called Kitty North, who sat opposite me on a long train journey this week. And she was asking me about iPads, which I was typing onto. And it turned out she is quite an impressive fine artist. Look at her stuff at www.kittynorth.com. Really, really lovely landscapes, mostly of Yorkshire, beautiful stuff. Have a look at that. My second one is Stuart McCune. Monologue 1-3 is now out. And I know that a number of us are proud owners of it. And he sent me an absolutely beautiful print this week. Absolutely gorgeous. It's been sitting at the post office for a number of days. And I've been desperately trying to get away from work to pick it up. But incredible stuff, yeah. And go and have a look at Epilogue, which is his new Kickstarter, which I know is already passed by a long way past its money. But it's a beautiful thing. Go and have a look. There you go.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'd second that on Mr. McCune's work as well, Stagger and stuff.
Yes.
His, again, just, the stuff he got sent through was fantastic. Like the quality of the work and the print, everything. It's brilliant.
Yeah. He's a machine, isn't he? Absolutely. Yeah.
And the depth he gets into story and the art is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Nice. Nice one.
Dan, do you have any?
Yeah, shout out for another life drawing event at Orbital Comics, which is on the 2nd of December. Sadly, I won't be able to go to it, but it's Tokyo Creep Show manga style multi-model life drawing class. There's going to be some words coming up right here which I don't know the meaning of. So, art model
like collecting. Sponge file.
I'm so glad I don't know the reason.
I don't know the word dignity. Apparently, something called dignity. <I've never heard. laughs>
It's Art Model Collective regular models. Manco and Carla will be joined by popular androgynous male Angel Ito. Together in outfits referencing Twisted Manga, Gothic Lolita, and Visual Kei, K-E-I, I don't know what that means. They'll be creating intriguing scenarios and visual storylines. The night's always really good. It's a 7 o'clock kickoff. You've got to be there at 7 for a 7:30 start. Tickets are £15. It's Friday, 2nd November. They usually have beers and wine on the go. It's a really good event to go check them out.
Yeah, I've been to several. They do a lot of events, and they do it off their own back in that shop. And yeah, good on them. Yeah, good people. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Another event that I just want to give a shout out to, the True Believers Christmas Comic Fair. Yes, True Believers is in February next year, but like a lot of events, they do a few things running up to it. Sunday, the 4th of December. 2016, obviously this year, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Smoky Joe's in Bennington Street in Cheltenham. Free entry and Christmas Comic Fair. So I guess you go there and get all that your Christmas goodness if you're in the area. True Believers is a great show as well. You know, we've got some stuff that we'll be doing there, so we'll be talking about that in the future. Go to oktruebelievers.com or smokyjoescheltenham.co.uk. That's I think there's a cosplay on the sort of flyer that I saw, Proud Lion, which is Cheltenham's comic book store, which I've heard a lot about. And also there's a cosplay group that's going to be there. So I think there's going to be quite a few things going on that day.
Oh, my God, brilliant.
So
I think we've had talks about doing a kind of cosplay-related show. I think that's still in the works.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So watch this space, people.
Yeah, can't wait.
I came to the dark heart of cosplay.
Dark heart.
If you really got some really dirty cosplay stories, please write them directly to me.
Oh, God, here we go. And my other shout-out for this week, before things get really dark, is Sam Reed. So I'll give a shout-out to Sam Reed, who sent me a copy of Zenthology.
You got it through. Oh, nice one.
I was part of. It was a little anthology he put together and launched at Thought Bubble. I think it did all right. It's a small little black and white sort of piece. I don't know how many pages it is. There's a cover by Abigail Harding. There's a strip by Ian Laurie. I did artwork for the story The Department, which is Sam Reed's script and Colin Bell letters, which were fantastic to see. Actually, I've heard a lot about Colin's sort of letters and design, and he put this book together as well, so it's quite cool. And also, there's a strip Going Up by Luca Pizzari and Adlai McCook. It's a great little book, actually. And like we were talking about seeing the final product of your work, and obviously, I'd only seen it on the screen, so to see this printed copy, I mean, Sam sent me a digital copy as well, but I was really pleased with how it came out. It looks really nice, actually. So,
a nice one, man.
Yeah.
Are we gonna mention the Leamington Comic Con thing as well? Do you want me to do that one, or?
Yes. Yeah. Just quickly, if you want to get a copy of Zenthology, then get in touch with Sam at Bronze T Rex on Twitter. There you go.
Cool.
Yes, Leamington. Talk to me.
Yeah, Leamington's coming up next year. They've got what's called a small press factor. So it's a bit like X Factor for the small press competition. So go to their Facebook page and have a look. The submissions to submit your entry, which is a short video and a book that's been produced, I think in the last year, is coming up, and it's Thursday this week. It's the 1st December. So if you want to get in the competition, there's all kinds of prizes and a booby prize of appearing on this podcast. Get over there and have a look at it. Yeah, go there for Facebook for Leamington Spa Comic Con. They're great guys, a really good competition, and we're really looking forward to that con in the new year, which is going to be great. So there you go.
So much to look forward to. Do you want to give any shout outs, Ken?
No, I think I'm right.
There you go.
To all of the contributors to Sliced, I can't do it without them. And if anyone wants to contribute, go and have a look at the website.
Yeah, there definitely do. It's a really, really good experience. Having done it myself, it's great fun. Yeah.
Awesome. So, speaking of other great things, recommendations. Tony, should we go?
Yeah, mine is something we talked about a few weeks ago when we saw the advert for it. I got very excited about seeing the advert for this. It was Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York are in one comic. It's come out of Boom Studios, who've run single run stories of both, a series of both those stories, which have now both finished, I think. Big Trouble in Little China certainly has. I'm not caught up on Escape from New York myself, but it's written by Greg Pak, art by Daniel Bayliss, colours by Triona Farrell, and letters by the UK's own Simon Boland. Six-issue mini-series, issues one and two are out so far, and it opens on Jack Burton, who is a hero to us all, and he's driving the Pork Chop Express, which, for anyone who doesn't know, it's his lorry, his truck. And he's doing what he commonly does. He gives a eulogy over his CB radio, full of sort of his own history and his sort of attitude towards stuff. And sitting next to him is the ghost of Lo Pan, who he famously defeated in Big Trouble in Little China. And he's complaining that he has to listen to this blowhard Jack. But Jack is sort of completely oblivious to this. He goes through a fiery tunnel and he ends up in 2001, which is Marauder territory, where he is completely confused for being Snake Plissken. I can't understand why, possibly. From Escape from New York and sadly Escape from LA, and he bumps into who he thinks is Wang, who's his mate, isn't he, from Big Trouble, but turns out to be someone else. And it is absolutely spot on. All the humour and all the settings are done with an absolute spot on eye for both the movies. Both the mood of both the movies is negotiated into one storyline. Snake's obviously really fucked off with Jack, and they just get on each other's nerves constantly. But it turns out they'd have more in common than you would think they would have, if anyone, they'd play by the same actor. Greg Pak's brilliant in it, and the art is really good. The art's sort of done with that feel to sort of the 1980s video style horror sci-fi, but it's got that sort of po-faced ridiculousness that you see in Big Trouble. Highly recommended by me. Issue 2's got a great cliffhanger as well, so go and buy that. Out from Boom Studios.
Nice. Dan.
This is from a Kickstarter project I backed a little while ago. It's Vampire Hunter D, Message from Mars. I was a big fan of the character from back in the day. They had some animated films too. Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust, which is absolutely fantastic. You can see it on YouTube illegally. it's nice. There's this random users uploading kind of old school manga and anime stuff onto YouTube. So they're all in there. Go check them out. I saw this on Kickstarter. It just kind of plopped out of nowhere. The reward tiers kind of got me. The first reward tier where you can actually buy a comic, a physical comic, starts at $20. And that's like five options down, which for $20 for a 25-page comic is a little bit steep. But the artwork is absolutely fantastic. It's a great intro to the story. I kind of can't wait to see where it goes. To be honest, I think rather than back more issues on the Kickstarter, I'll just wait till it comes out in a collected edition and get it in that. But yeah, if you like Vampire Hunter D, you'll love this. So give it a go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
My recommendation for this week, I'll give a big shout out to Lee Grice, one of the hosts of Small Press Big Mouth back in the day. Saw on his Twitter that he had picked this up, and it's called It's Ghastly, The Untimely Demise of Scream.
This looks great, yeah.
Comic Archive. Yeah, this is great, actually. I mean, I've mentioned it a couple of small times on the show. I didn't want to talk about Scream too much during our anthology episode because I knew I was going to be talking about this. But Scream was one of those great 80s horror anthologies that only ran for like 15 issues or so, I think.
It's very beloved as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, people really do think back and love it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real cult sort of 80s anthology sort of thing. There was ongoing strips like the Dracula Files and the 13th Floor. You know, they had, much like 2000 AD, they had the sort of the Crypt Keeper called, what's his name, Ghastly McNasty.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, this hooded figure that would introduce the comic. There's strange sort of horror tales. And this, it came to an untimely sort of demise. Once again, as I said earlier, it merged with Eagle. before sort of dying away. So like I said earlier, everything I seemed to like in the 80s was just swallowed up by Eagle before fading away. So there you go. But this is a great sort of, it's 64 pages, black and white. It's, I think it's A4 size, sub A4 sort of size. 10 of the middle pages are all in colour. But what it is, it's lots of articles about Scream and like what led to its sort of end. It's interviews with like Barry Tomlinson, you know, the people that were involved with it. So there's Barry Tomlinson, Simon Furman, Ian Rimmer, they also include sort of artwork that never got published. There's a strip called The Nightcomers in the back, which is basically a lost tale that like never went to print. So they've collected it, they've cleaned it up, and you've got like a whole story in the back of this. Just great articles about some of the stories that they came up with but were never written. Like, they wanted to do a story called Werewolf and get, like, I've forgotten his name. Steve Dillon, that was it. Dillon. Yeah, Steve Dillon had worked on a werewolf book. And around the same sort of time, they wanted to do an ongoing werewolf strip.
It was the Judge Dredd werewolf story, didn't it, I think?
That's what. And they were, I mean, they never came to fruition. And they also thought he might have been heartily sick of drawing werewolves by that time as well.
Right, okay.
But there was this great ideas for stories. Like, one of them's like Alien Bones that never went to print, which is about the ghost of an alien. Has there ever been a story about an alien ghost? There must have been. But that sounds like such a great concept. like to treat it like a haunted, like a proper ghost story, but it's an alien. It's just fascinating as well. I mean, for instance, I loved the comic, but you know, when you love it and it just disappears, you're not quite sure how it comes to an end. And now I'm quite fascinated in those sort of like behind the scenes and discovering like how things played out. And this has got all of it, really. There's a section about like covers as well. It shows you different sort of styles of cover, the work that went into it before it went to print. So I love it.
Alan Moore write for Scream? Did he write under a pen name for something or other? I've got a feeling he did, didn't he?
He may have done. He had something to do with it, I believe.
Remember the name of the story now? Yeah.
I mean, one of the interesting things that I read in it, we were talking about Des Skin earlier. There's a small article saying that he might have been one of the reasons why it sort of came to an end. One of the many, I think there was lots of different sort of reasons for it. But there's a small article saying that he got their solicitors involved because there was a story in, I think, the last issue of Scream that was very similar, very, very similar to one he did in the House of Hammer. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So, but
the person who's put this together, then says afterwards, I asked Des about this, and he said, I dropped the IPC action when I discovered it was a very good mate of mine who'd ripped the story off. Corporations are fair game, but I've never believed in hurting folk. It only comes around again later. Karma and all that.
Which really?
I thought was quite interesting. But yeah, this is written and edited by David McDonald, and it's clearly by someone who loved the book. I think it's with a lot of help from the Back from the Depths crew. I think Chris Sides is one of them as well. So if you want to get it, it's £7.50 from comicsy.co.uk/Hibernia. They're the people that put it out, Comic Archive. They've done it as well as this. This is the first time I've ever picked up a book like this from them. But they do them about lots of other strips from the 80s as well. Lots of articles. It's well thought out and well put together. So it's just a great read. So there you go. That's mine this week.
Nice.
Ken, what would you like to recommend?
I've got a couple of recommends, and I'm going to be cheeky and say I should have mentioned Sam Bentley when Dan brought up Cognition, because he brought a lot to that book, and people should go and have a look at his stuff.
Definitely.
My first one is A Dark Forest by Kate Meyer White, and I think she's got a Kickstarter on the go at the minute for issue 4 of it, which has under 2 weeks to go. And it's just, I think Vince said earlier, there's these books where they're just lovely objects.
Yeah.
And it's just this A5, and it's only like a 15, 16-page comic. and it's got a nice thick cover and it's string, got string in the binding, and the art just looks like it's woodblock printed, like it's been carved and woodblock printed. It's very, it's
okay,
dark pages, and yeah, it's just a beautiful thing. And I started, I read through the first two issues last night, and the first one is a bit uneven with the writing, but it really hits its stride, and the art carries it, and it's sort of a little bit about witchcraft and Wicca, and basically about two girls going into the woods, you know, and it's, yeah, really, really lovely. So I'd recommend having a look at that. And the last one is a comic telling of Macbeth.
Okay.
By Stuart Moore, who contributed a few pages to Sliced. He contributed the Newspaper Man ones, which is the bald guy with newspaper print over his face.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
They're quite abstract one-pagers. And he took up this challenge of adapting the Prague Shakespeare Company's production of Macbeth, and he illustrated it in about 28 days. Bloody and it's about... it's over 100 pages.
What?
And the way he worked is... Yeah, because I'm guessing the Prague production is a cut down version of the full play.
Yeah.
But I spoke to him about it because I really, really enjoyed it. And I bought it when I was recovering from my back operation a few months ago. And I, you know, a nice light hearted tale during recovery. You know? And I was reading through it and it just sort of struck me. I haven't read a lot of comic Shakespeare adaptations. I know they're out there, but this one really gave me the beats of performance. You know, you were picking up, there were physical cues to pick up on that helped you unlock the language. And it really did feel like a performance, you know, and the way his art is very similar to the other recommendation. He actually started with black pages and sort of added the white to denote where the light was hitting.
Oh, interesting. Right. Yes.
Yeah. And I've worked like that a couple of times with some of my illustration work, and I sometimes find it easier. So I think you can get that on Amazon. I think it might be a print-on-demand thing on Amazon, so I'd definitely check that out. And it's got a very stark, well-designed cover.
And if anyone is doing an audio play of Macbeth, the three of us are available to play the witches.
Lovely.
Anyone.
The sexiest witches you'll ever find. Oh dear, I never thought about that. I always think about like three collection of characters to use whenever I say we're recording tonight. Tonight was the goodies. I think it's gonna be those Macbeth witches.
We're never that highbrow, are we? Let's face it.
No.
Yeah. We've been brought right up by Ken on the show.
Yes. Yeah. He's proper made us classy. Thank you very much for joining us this week, Ken. It's been brilliant.
Yeah,
cheers, Ken.
I'm sure there'll be a few people getting in touch with you about...
hopefully there are, mate. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I would say as well, it's going to mention in the show, if you're kind of, you're an artist or a writer and you think about you want to get into comics, an anthology is the perfect way to kind of get your feet wet.
Yeah,
by definitely. You're not risking anything by doing a 4 or 5 page comic.
Yeah.
Try it out, see if it's for you. Exactly. Just try it out.
Yeah. I mean, just a page strip anyway is an amazing test of telling a comic book sort of story, a sequential tale. You know, if you can do it in one page.
I mean, you might have done stuff yourself, but if you do it for an anthology and you're working for something, there's more of a goal and more of an achievement at the end of it.
Yeah.
I would say give it a go.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely, because I've just sort of tenuously accepted my first sort of 3-panel. Submission.
Oh, well, wow. Nice.
To put in, you know, and he's got a whole collection of them, and we're going to go through them and pick some stuff that might fit together for a couple of pages and work. Do you know what I mean? And I've got a writer working on a sort of Sunday funny pages.
Okay, cool.
To try and point out that that's sort of dying out a little bit. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, if you've got any weird ideas, we're definitely the place
to. We've got a few of them, Ken.
Yes. Yes, and we want God. Where we normally get all your weird ideas, people, is on the email. So if you like this episode and want to know more about anything we've talked about, thank you. I may have gone away, but I've still got it.
Not really.
not really. I've still got it. I've got cream for it, so it should clear up next week. Yeah, let us know what you think, or if you want to know more about anything we spoke about this week, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, at any events or anything that we need to know about, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at the Awesome Pod. Should be a little bit more active now that I'm back from holiday.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully. You never know.
I want to grab the sign on for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can spam everyone.
Shit will go real.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, prepare yourself over the next couple of months because things are going to get really real. Facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Follow us up on there. Like us. You know, we're whores. We need your love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on. You ask them as well. Every week I'm the one.
No, we need a little iTunes review, don't we? We could do with a new one.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
I made myself look like an absolute fool during the week, which before 8 a.m.
I do not believe that, Dan. How could you possibly do that?
Well, I was kind of saying that the Facebook page for the Vanguard comic, I was getting loads of likes, and they were all kind of from Thailand. And I was like, it must be fake. And someone I know who lives in Thailand said, well, actually, there's a really big comic culture over here. They probably really enjoy the comic. I was like, oh, great. Maybe something to look, a complete xenophobic twat. Yeah.
But we all
when
know...
When are you meeting this person? Lunch? What?
We know that you love everyone who reads Vanguard, Dan.
Yes, yeah. I do.
And it's very good. And you can learn more about
Vanguard,
it.
I said, while Vanguard's down, you can check out what I'm doing on patreon.com/Vanguard comic. And $1 a month will see all the sketches and drawings I'm doing for other projects.
You-ha!
That's how it's done. Got to make money.
Yeah, the boy knows how to work the crowd.
Oh. The boy needs a new pair of shoes.
Have your Heelys broken? Anyway,
need some more RJs.
Yeah. Oh, not again. Yes, leave us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps get the word out about the show. Thank you for listening, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com, whether it was on the Stitcher network, or indeed the Podnose network. We love each and every one of you. And where can they find us online, Tony?
Ezoyes on Twitter, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z, or you can find me at www.GaryHardingLikesJam.com.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Good old Gary and his
Gary
jam.
Harding, and he loves jam. He does love it.
Do you love jam?
He does. I kind of like it. I like marmalade.
Oh, I'm not a marmalade fan. I'm all about the jam myself. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Seedless. Yeah. Dan, where can people find you?
The aforementioned patron. Or you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com, and I'm on Twitter at vanguardcomic. I just wanted to say thanks for all the feedback and response we got from the last episode.
Yeah, it's really good, that, mate. I really like that one. Yeah.
People seem to really enjoy it, and I've got a lot of interaction from readers and new readers and listeners, and I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Cool.
There you go. You can follow me online at Jester Diablo and find out more about my comic, The Red Mask, at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Ken, where can people find you online and find out more about Sliced, etc.?
I'm at K Reynolds Design on Twitter. Slice Quarterly is slicequarterly.co.uk. But I'm thinking of rerouting everything through Vanguard and maybe at Vanguard.
It's where all the cool kids go.
All my friends in Thailand do.
Because I thought there was all into other stuff over there, but obviously I was wrong.
Have you not heard of Vanguard Day in Thailand? It's massive over there.
Yeah, they love it over there.
Yeah.
I think you should have a Thai character in it just to pander to them.
Thai time. It's no. So it's late. The puns aren't.
He's not quite the Punisher this week.
No. The pun gun has jammed.
Brings it back to the jam.
We're all about the jam. When we go off air, we're going to talk some more about jam. So you're going to miss out on that, folks. Never mind, eh? But thank you for listening this week. From Ken, Dan, Tony, and myself. Read loads of comics, read lots of anthologies, and as always, stay awesome. See ya!
See ya!
See ya!
right, we might as well just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, please.
Don't be a cock.
Too late now.
Yeah, I should have asked that on week one, shouldn't I?
Okay. Before week one, I think would have been the idea.